Thank you. I'm just delighted to hear of all the different success stories in this room, of all the people who've changed their lives with these ideas and these tapes and other ideas and other inputs. It's just wonderful. It just proves over and over again how possible it is for us to get dramatic changes in our results by simply bringing about small changes in what we do. And this afternoon, we're just really getting into the final meat of this program. This afternoon, we'll talk about some key ideas and some of the most important that you'll ever learn. You know, our goal is that you achieve financial independence or more as a result of this seminar, right? And you can do it if you decide to, right? And you like yourself and you're the best, right? And if the truth were known, you are unstoppable, right? All right. Well, all you need to do, by the way, and I learned this, it changed my life when I was a young man, is to go back to the basic principle of Socrates, cause and effect, learn and do, learn and do, learn and do. There's never been a shortcut. There's never been anything complicated. Just learn and do. Cause and effect, learn and do. And anything that anybody else has done, you can do as well. You can just learn what they've learned, and you can do it. Now, some things you'll learn more easily for whatever reason, and some things will be harder for you for whatever reason, but you could eventually learn them. Anybody here could be a rocket scientist if they really wanted to, long enough and hard enough. Anybody here could be a millionaire entrepreneur if they really wanted to, long enough and hard enough. What anybody else has learned, you can learn as well. The only question is, how badly do you want it? And that's the most important thing of all, at least to start. Okay, so now let's talk and take, we talked about goals. I will guarantee that almost everybody wrote down somewhere in the goal setting exercise, more money. Some people wrote down lots more. Some people wrote down lots more and only more and by gum, more still, right? Good. Nothing wrong with that. Might as well, since we have something like, you know, $20, $30 trillion sloshing around within the American economy, might as well hold out your bucket and get some. You know, you can't keep it. They'll take half of it away from you in taxes. So consider it a patriotic duty to become wealthy. You know, do it for your country. All right. Personal strategic planning for the high performer. Number one, as we said, you are in business for yourself. You are the president of your own corporation. That means anything that is going to happen to your private business, your personal business, is up to you to do. No one else can be expected to do it for you. Here is a perverse law. The more you accept that you are responsible for doing it, the more others will line up to help you. And the more you try to get others to do it for you, the more they will flee from you as if you had a bad illness or a contagious disease. So therefore, say if it's to be, it's up to me. Number two, your aim in strategic planning is to increase your return on energy. R-O, energy. The purpose of strategic planning in business is to increase return on equity, return on capital working in the organization. But your capital is mental, emotional, and human. Your job is to get the most out of your mental, emotional, and intellectual capital. Highest return on energy. Number three is successful individuals also have good strategic plans because a good strategic plan assures that you will get the highest return on the amount of energy that you invest. Remember, some people work 20 or 30 or 40 years and end up poor. Some people work the same number of years in the same business, often at pretty much the same salary, and end up wealthy. The people who end up wealthy have a plan. 3A, the Yale study, which you've heard of from 1953 to 1973, they asked the graduating class, how many people here have written goals and have made plans to accomplish them once you leave the university? They found, surprise, surprise, 3% had written goals, 13% had goals but not written, and 84% had no goals at all. When they went back 20 years later and they asked them, how are you doing? They found that the 3% with written goals 20 years later were worth more than the entire other 97% put together in financial terms. And some of them had graduated at the top of the class and some at the bottom, And some had gone into industry, and some into business, and some into finance, and some had moved east, and some had moved west, and some had gone into business and gone bankrupt, and some had been married, and some had been divorced. And there was no other correlation except that they came out of the gate focused on their goals. Now, in Mark McCormick's book, What They Still Don't Teach You at the Harvard Business School, he talks about a Harvard study where they duplicated the Yale study in 1979. In 1979, they asked the same questions of the graduates of the MBA faculty, probably some of the best educated, smartest graduates in America, and they found the same numbers. 3% had written goals, 13% had goals, but they weren't written, 84% had no goals at all. Here's what they found. They found that the 13% who had goals, but not written, were earning on average, this is 10 years later, were earning on average twice as much as the people in the 84% who had no goals. What they found was that the people who had goals, the 3%, however, were earning on average 10 times as much as the other 97%. Well, these statistics are repeated over and over and over again. Those who have good financial plans accomplish things financially. In fact, you can actually tell how serious you are about financial success by looking at your plans. Do you have good, well-organized, detailed, thoroughly backed, analyzed research plans or not? If you do, then you're serious about your financial future. And if you don't, you're not serious about your financial future, because it's only what you do that counts. It's not what you wish. No, it's not what you hope or intend or procrastinate on. It's what you do. Number four, good strategic planning acts as an accelerator toward personal achievement. It acts as an accelerator. It accelerates your progress. It's like stepping on the gas of your life. So you go, bam, down the road of life much faster. Number five is all strategic planning is market planning. What does this mean? It means that all strategic planning in business is aimed at increasing or changing financial numbers. Personal goal setting, well, can be different. You can set goals for health and happiness and travel, but business strategic planning is aimed at numbers. It's aimed at money. It's aimed at the market, and it's aimed at what you have to do relative to the market to attain certain financial objectives. Number six. Number six is you start off with what are your income and sales goals? Since we're in sales here, what are your income goals? How much do you want to make? And how much will you have to sell? You don't need to be specific, but these are questions you absolutely need to know. What do we know? Is the very best. People are the most accurate with regard to how much they want to make and exactly what they have to do to make that amount. And the least successful people are very fuzzy about both numbers. And the very act of writing them down, even though your numbers will not be perfectly correct over time, the very act of writing them down makes it 10 times more likely you'll hit your targets, because it's like shooting at a target you can see as opposed to shooting with your eyes closed. So, first exercise is write down how much you want to make or expect to make in 1997, and be honest with yourself. Don't be silly. If you've made $25,000 so far, don't say you plan to make $150,000 this year, because that's nonsense. That's government accounting. You know, totally divorced from reality. So just write down what you expect to make this year and how much you'll have to sell in order to make that amount. And then go to 98. And you can increase your income goals by anywhere from 10 to 50%, but pick a number you're comfortable with. If you think 25% is a good increase, write it down. If you think 30 or 40% is an increase, write it down. If you think 10, doesn't matter. It does not matter. Write a number you're comfortable with and work out what you're going to what you want to earn and how much you'll have to sell to make those amounts. Go, and go quickly. Write quickly. You don't have to work this out on a computer. You just have to put in some intelligent guesstimates. Okay, let's go on to the next question. Right quickly, we don't need precise numbers, we just need to think it through. After this seminar, of course, we need to get precise numbers. After this seminar, you want to sit down and work out with a calculator and be very precise about your goals for each year, and then exactly what you'll have to do to attain them. So number 7, what net worth do you want to have in each of these years? Start off with your current net worth. How much are you worth today? A nickel, a dime, a dollar, $10,000? If you had to go to the bank and say, this is how much I could sell everything I have for cash, that's all banks care about, is what you can sell for cash, is how much would you say you were worth today? Don't count your clothes, don't count your furniture. Don't count your car or your lawn equipment. Don't count your CD collection or anything else. You just look at what you could sell for cash. Think garage sale, and that'll tell you how much you're worth. Well, how much are you worth today, and what do you want to be worth at the end of 1997? If you're worth $35,000 today, do you want to be worth $50,000 at the end of 1997? And then 1998, increase your net worth goal, again, by maybe 10 to 15% a year. Most people who become wealthy at anywhere between 8 and 15% a year. Today in America, it's a little bit different because of the run-up in stock prices, so some people have seen huge jumps. But 10 to 15% a year in net worth after taxes, after living expenses, after everything, is pretty good. So what net worth do you want to have at the end of this year? What net worth do you want to have at the end of next year, and so on? Write down 5 figures. Right quickly. It seems remarkable, but the fact is that the starting point of increasing your income or your net worth is very simple. Can you guess what it is? Decide to do it. Make a decision to do it. You say, well, it can't be that simple. It is simple. It's not easy, but it's simple. Now, there's a lot of things you can do after you've made a decision. But there's very few things you can do before making a decision or without making a decision at all. So make a decision. And your decision may be wrong and it may be inaccurate, but at least it's a starting point. It's like a stamp. It's like a line in the ground that you step over. So make a decision. You say, well, what if I don't get it? Don't worry about it. At least get it on paper. Number 8, break your 1997 goals down into monthly, weekly, and daily goals. Remember we talked about this before with sales and income goals? You should have it. If your annual income goal is $50,000, then let's say you're going to work 50 weeks of the year, so therefore your weekly goal is $4,000 a week, and your daily goal is $200 a day, and your hourly rate is $25. The more precisely you think, the more likely it is you will accomplish great things. If you think in fuzzy generalities, well, you will accomplish fuzzy generalities. So how much do you want to make? How much do you want to make per month, and how much will you have to sell? How much do you want to make per week? How much will you have to sell? How much do you want to make per day? How much will you have to sell? I worked with a sales team once, and I met them a couple of years later, and they told me remarkable things because they followed one piece of advice that came out of the course, is write down your daily sales goal on a 3x5 index card and put it on your dashboard or on your steering wheel so that you could see it as you moved around. And they said, some of the people did this, and the others didn't. And the ones that did it literally leaped ahead of all the other people. For some reason, the very fact of having it in front of them every time they got in and out of their car led to them hitting those targets much more often than not by the very fact that it was written down. Because remember, when you see something written down in front of you, even if your mind is looking out the window, your subconscious mind is picking it up through what is called secondary suggestion, level of secondary suggestion. So the numbers are actually being recorded into your subconscious mind where all kinds of things happen to them. So write these down. And number 9 is, what is your desired hourly rate? Write this down. Do you want to make $100,000 next year? Then it's $50. If you want to make $50,000 next year, then it's $25. If you want to make $75,000, then it's $37.50. What is your desired hourly rate? This is something people in selling have a hard time with, but once you get it, you've got it. From that moment onward, you don't do anything that doesn't pay you that hourly rate. And if all you do is do things that pay you that hourly rate all day, every day, you must achieve your goal, ultimately. Number 10, break your goals down into the activities necessary to achieve them. And I will leave you this as an exercise, but basically, as we said yesterday, activities are controllable. You cannot control the sales, but you can control the activities which yield or lead inevitably to the sales. So the more precise you are about activities, the more likely it is you will accomplish your goal. So you start off with your sales volume. How much do you want to sell total? And how many sales will you have to sell? Work out how much you earn per sale. And so you divide that and you get, well, I'll have to have, if I want to make $50,000 a year, I make $500 a sale, that means I'll have to make 100 sales. Okay, number of calls. Well, I have to call on a roughly, based on my notes, 15 people to make a sale. So therefore, I'll have to make 1,500 calls. 1,500 calls to make 100 sales to make $50,000. And how many presentations will you have to make that many sales? Well, you keep good, accurate records so you know how many presentations you've made and work it out. Maybe you have to make 3 presentations for every sale, 2 for 15 calls. So write that down. 100, 300 presentations. Number of proposals? Well, one of those 3 buys when you make the presentation, the other 2 need a proposal. So I need 200 proposals. And daily activities, how many people will I have to call every day in order to achieve my goal daily, weekly, monthly? If you break it down like that, then first thing Monday morning at 8 o'clock, you start working on your numbers. And if you hit your numbers every single day, sure as God made little green apples, you're going to hit your numbers every week, every month. Big mistake we make is we don't hit our numbers Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We say we'll really pour it all on Friday morning, and we work at it for a couple of hours on Friday, then quit. And we say, well, do it twice as hard on Monday next week. And it just gets further and further behind. The key is to hold your own feet to the fire. One top salesman told me that what he would do is he would go into work and he would not allow himself to have a cup of coffee till he'd made 5 calls. He would not allow himself to have lunch until he had made 2 appointments or 10 or 15 calls. He would not allow himself to go to the bathroom until he'd made a certain number of calls. He kept disciplining himself. He said, when you start missing lunch and you start to get hungry because you procrastinated and fooled around all morning and you keep your promise to yourself, he said, you get smart real fast. He said, you stop fooling around. You get there in the morning and you recognize lunch is at stake here. And lunch is sure more important than somebody you've never seen or heard of in your life who may be disapproving on the phone. Call him up. I've got to talk to you. My lunch is at stake. Number 11, your overarching goal is financial independence. Your overarching goal is financial independence. Remember, your work is a means to an end. It's important that you do it, but if you only had 6 months to live, it would suddenly become irrelevant. Your work is a means to an end. Your job is to trade your life for financial independence. Now, why should you want to be financially independent? So you can eat good meals and drive a nice car, wear nice clothes? Why do you want to be financially independent? Choices! Perfect! You want to be free! I gotta be free, right? Freedom is what we want. That's what everybody wants. You can never be too free. You can never have more choices. We love to be free, and money makes us free. Money sets us free. And that's why we want it. You want to be successful so you can be free. So you don't have to be beholden to anyone. You don't have to be beholden to anyone. You're your own person. If you don't like the situation you're in, you can walk away. Why? It's because you've got money in the bank. There's nothing worse than feeling trapped because you have no money. There's nothing better than feeling that you are your own person, your own boss, because you've got money. Love it. Love it. Wave at the world with one finger and walk away, right? Now, number 11 A, in order to be a great success, you need to develop long-time perspective. Long-time perspective, as we said before, is imagine that this is now, and this is 10 years from now. Long-time perspective is when you project forward 10 years, and you look around, and you say, what will I have to do all the way back to the present, step by step, day by day, to achieve this goal? The critical word in long-time perspective is sacrifice. What sacrifices will I have to make today in order to assure my future? That, by the way, is the key question for financial independence. All men and women who have started with nothing or come to these shores with nothing, who have built something worthwhile, have had the willpower and the discipline and the tenacity and the resolution to sacrifice for long periods of time until they finally achieve their goal. And so can you. And so can you. But sacrifice is the key. Short-term pain, we say, for long-term gain. And B is develop short-time perspective. Short-time perspective means that you focus on making every minute count. You break your hour down into 10 and 15 minute chunks. We have found, surprisingly enough, and they did a study of Fortune 500 CEOs a couple of years ago, Wall Street Journal report on it. They followed them around and they looked at their time management habits. They found two things that the top highest paid executives, people who started at the bottom, basically in the shipping room, and worked to the top of major corporations, they had two habits. One is they gave a lot of thought to how they used their time. They thought about their time in advance, which of course guaranteed that they used it far better than if they just ran after it. Second of all is they managed their time in small pieces. Is they didn't think of what I will do tomorrow afternoon. They thought of what I will do tomorrow at 2:30 and at 2:45 and at 3 o'clock. And you find the most successful people are those whose time is measured the most precisely. Now, here's a question for you. It's a chicken and egg question. Did people become successful and then measure their time very precisely? Or do they measure the time very precisely and as a result use it far better and then become successful? Of course. A philosopher once said that life is the study of attention. And the uncertainty principle, Heisinger's uncertainty principle, says that the very act of studying or observing a phenomenon affects its behavior. Your very act of studying your time and thinking about your time causes you to use your time differently, and by differently we mean better. The very act of thinking about your time, paying attention to your time, will cause you automatically to use your time more productively. And what is a productive use of time, by definition? Anything that helps you to move towards your goals is a productive use of time. And so what is a more productive use of time? Anything that is even more helpful to moving you toward even more important goals. Now you know how to manage time. Just simply think about your time and ask, does this fit the parameters? So short-time perspective is the key. And here is the rule, and I love this rule, by the way. It's the rule for great success. Going back to our discussion of leadership, it's long-term vision combined with short-term focus. Long-term vision combined with short-term focus. Those are the keys. Long-term vision, long-term goals, plans, aspirations, combined with minute-to-minute focus on the most important things you can do right now to assure that you achieve those goals in the long term. How do you know that you know something? We talked about this briefly yesterday. How do you know that you know anything? What's the test? What's the acid test? You can teach someone else. Now, here's how you really know that you know something. Is you can teach it to someone else so clearly that they can then teach it to someone else and the third party can understand it as clearly as you do. That's how you know you know. I say to people, well, do you know about goal setting? Yes. Well, tell me about it. Well, I can't tell you about it. I just know all about it. If you cannot articulate something so clearly in words that the person you're talking to can clearly understand it and tell it to another party, then you don't know it yourself. Are you with me so far? So when we talk about these principles, when we talk about time management, long-term vision, short-term focus, if a person says to you, what are your long-term goals, and what are the most important things that you do on a day-to-day basis to achieve them, you should be able to tell them just like that, very fast. If you don't, it means you don't know. If you do, it means you know absolutely. If you don't, it means that you're basically shadow boxing in the dark. If you do know, it means you're going to accomplish extraordinary things. Number 12 is there are three rules for financial freedom. Rule number one is violate Parkinson's law. This is the key. You've got to become a lawbreaker. You've got to violate Parkinson's law. That scummy law, that rotten principle, the principle that condemns us all to underachievement, frustration, failure, poverty, stupidity, ignorance, and dependency in old age. We've got to break the law. Smash it. I thought you'd never ask, dear. What is Parkinson's law? You all know Parkinson's law. Parkinson's law is that expenses arise to meet income. No matter how much you make, you spend that much and a little bit more besides. Because why? It's because your income goes up gradually over time, and so you just creep up your expenses. Sometimes with credit, you actually spend more, and sometimes vastly more than you earn. Last year, 1,194,000 Americans declared personal bankruptcy. Primary reason? Credit cards. Overextended credit. People gave them credit, and they borrowed and borrowed and borrowed. People making $25,000 a year going bankrupt with $120,000 worth of credit card debt. They couldn't even service the minimum payments on the cards. And what they did is they got one card, and then they applied for another and another and another, and they began to run them up to their limits. And they ran them all the way out, and then finally collapsed in bankruptcy. When you break Parkinson's law, what you do is you refuse to allow your expenditures to rise to consume all of your income. You break the law. I'll give you a very simple model. I call it the wedge. This is the key to success. Here is income over time. Okay, this is income here and income over time. Over time, your income goes up. If you're not careful, your expenditures, we'll call them, put them in red for a good reason, your expenditures will go up like this. Sometimes they'll get up much higher, but your expenditures will be like this and you'll never have any discretionary income. 70% of American families have no discretionary income. 100% of everything they make is consumed every month and a little more besides. And they're in debt. And they're scared. And they're nervous. Something like 70 to 80% of American families are two paychecks away from homelessness. Because if their jobs were lost and their income were cut off, they would not be able to afford their current lifestyle. First the cars would go, then the house would go. They'd be out doing something else, living somewhere else. Well, this is what I call the wedge. The wedge is where you drive a wedge. You allow your living standards to increase, but not as much as your income. And this wedge, which you drive, and by the way, it's like turning onto this road. The further down the road you go, the further away you get from the road you turned off. The more you drive this wedge, the greater the gap you drive between the two, and this gap here equals wealth. You take this money and put it away, and you'll become wealthy. And the main reason why people fail is because we live in what is called a total consumer society. Everybody is obsessed with spending. Most of the things we buy, we don't need at all. We buy so much stuff. We have enough clothes to last us for years. We buy books we'll never read in all our lives. We buy CDs, and I have videos I've got through the video clubs, you too. I haven't watched, I never did watch them, never even unwrapped them. We buy stuff that we use once and never use again. We are a consumer society, and we are drowning in commercial messages, between 600 and 2,000 messages every day, every one of them saying, buy, 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 and no payments until January. And the only way that you succeed is you must resist the pressure of the consumer society. We'll talk about this in a second. Now, the second B is eschew status. This is what Thomas Stanley found in Self-Made Millionaires. It was the number one attitude, eschew status, he said, in the short term. In other words, don't worry about keeping up with the Joneses. Let the Joneses keep up with each other. You don't need a new car every year or 2 years. Eschew status, avoid status. Buy an inexpensive watch, buy clothes inexpensively, buy your furniture from reasonable places. In other words, don't worry about having great stuff in the short term. Because the people who are obsessed with status usually end up poor and penniless at the end. The people who are obsessed with financial independence end up wealthy, and they can have all the status they want. Have you ever heard of the little exercise? Take one penny and you double it every day for 30 days? Well, here's an exercise. The first day, it's 1 cent. The second day, it's 2. Third day, it's 4. Fourth day, it's 8. Next day, it's 16. Next day, it's 32. Then it's 64. Suddenly, now it's $1.28. And then it's $2.56, and so on. Well, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. At this point, let's say we go one step higher and we go to $5.12. At this point, it's not very much. But if you let it ride, it will be worth how much at the end of 31 days? How much? $5.3 million. Times 30 days, it's $5.3 million. And you know what people do? Is at this point, they take it and spend it. And that's what everybody is doing instead of letting it ride, baby, ride. Keep the income growing. Eschew status until it reaches the point where it's so large. And at the end of that time, you can come back and buy all the watches and cars you want. But if you take your $5.12 now and go and spend it, which is what most people do, you know, you'll get very little. C is pay yourself first. Pay yourself first has been the number one rule for financial success. Instead of saving what's left over, you save before you spend and you live on the rest. And we'll talk about that in the next session.
This is the end of this disc. The program continues on the next CD.